There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk about. TheQuantEdge.com, new great fantasy baseball action going over at TheQuantEdge.com. And they're offering great lineup optimizers, injury tools, Vegas tools, so much more over there. They also have NBA playoffs still alive and kicking. Football will be back later this year. If you want to go try it all out, though, you can get the MLB season pass for $124.99. You can get a first month of all sports to get the NBA playoffs and baseball for $19.99 or a five-day trial for $5 by using promo code Bubba. So go to thequantedge.com, get the tools you need to succeed, and use promo code Bubba to get there. Also, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd much appreciate it. It would help the podcast move up the rankings and more people could see it and listen to it, and everything would be fine and dandy. Now, to Bench with Bubba, episode 170 with our good buddy Joe P. Sapia, talking some fantasy baseball fab action and recapping episode 5 of season 8, Game of Thrones. Everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 170. Going to recap the week 7 fab action and recap last night's episode of Game of Thrones. It's episode 5, a big one, very, very big one. In order to do so, had to bring back a friend of the podcast, a friend of mine. You can find him on Twitter at Joe P. Sapia 17. Joey P. in the house. How we doing?
You know what they say, Bubba, in Brooklyn, when you're, you know, part of the family and the mob, you're a friend of ours, as they say, Anthony Brasco. That's what I am. That's what you are to me, a friend of ours. We're part of the family here, Bubba. That's what it's all about. I'm great, man. I'm super excited to talk a little sports and a little Thrones. What's better than that?
Yeah, there isn't much better than that. It's one of those things I've been trying to make a point on my Monday episodes to get someone that loves the Thrones to recap it with me. And it's been getting very, very fun. I had Dawkins last week, your boy from Fantrax. Yeah. And then I got Mr. Modica next Monday. So,
you got Modica for the finale. That's lots of thoughts. I've watched the entire series now 4 times.
Oh, so boy.
I am a super fan. And I'll tell you what, every time you watch it, there's things as it progresses that you see that have been laid in there and put in there so nicely, and things you go, oh my God, that's amazing. Or look at that moment, or look at that, you know, tiny little nuances and pieces and little shots here and there that are just so wonderful and just so well done. And I think that's what makes it such a special series, is you can watch it over and over again. You keep finding things that are so great about it.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to have you on for this episode, because after the battle, I didn't know where I was going to go when we talked, but we also had an idea that things were going to get pretty deep real quick. So I was looking forward to having you on to talk about this, and we will get to that here soon. But first, we got some interesting things to talk about here. We got Jameson Taillon of the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, we were already concerned about his arm injury. Now they're saying he's out till at least early July, if lucky, if not longer. When you hear information like that, news like that, Joe,
how are you, like, if you're a Tyon owner that was maybe holding out hope, do you still hold out that hope?
Well, this was pretty much procedural anyway. I mean, they were basically shutting them down for 6 weeks and then letting them build back up anyway. So this is not shocking, but I think what it does is it drives it home for you a little bit. It says, look, it's going to be 60 days and it's the middle of May. So that means not the middle of June, but the middle of July. And you've got to look yourself in the mirror and understand, I think in redraft leagues, I think the first thing I would do is, if I was a Tyon owner, I would look to the teams at the top of my standings if they were above me, and I would be seeing what I could get from them that could help me now, because 60 days is a long time. You can fall completely out of a race in 60 days. So I think I would be moving on from Tyon, because you don't know what kind of setbacks he has. There is a coin flip, you know, kind of like every time a Targaryen is born, God flips a coin. Same thing with a pitcher who has some sort of forearm issue. Same kind of thing, same issue. You flip a coin, it could be Tommy John or it could not be. But I think that this is something I'd move on from. It becomes more complicated, like in my Dynasty League, I have him in there and I have him at a nice price, like $20 with like a $5 increase next year. And it's frustrating because I don't want to give up on him. But then I'm really worried because, then what if I next year, then I, if he's out with Tommy John, then he's really going to miss most of the year. If he has it in the midsummer, it's going to suck. And then, it's just a disaster. So I'm kind of like between a rock and a hard place, but in dynasty leagues, I feel like, or keepers, you just have to bite the bullet, dude, and just hold him and hope for the best, because you don't want to give up on him because pitching is so hard to find. So, but redraft, forget it. I'm moving on if I can.
Yes. But now, would you just up and drop him, or would you have to trade him to get rid of, to move on?
Oh, I don't want to drop him. And I think somebody out there, if I'm a, and I'll give you the inverse. If I am somebody who has you know, it was at the top of the standings, I would be looking for a guy like Tyon or Severino right now. I would be acquiring those guys. Chances are the teams that drafted them right now are looking for some now help. And if I'm a team that's kind of kicking ass in the standings, I'm like, hey, I can take a flyer. I can give up a, if I give a Sonny Gray up and another piece or something like that, or, you know, some piece that I haven't had all year, let's say I had Scooter Gennett and another pitcher and a pitcher that I could just give. Well, why not? I mean, that's a pretty good deal. And I think you take that and you run on both ends of that deal. And I think that's what you'd be looking for right now.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. Let's talk about another pitcher real quick that hit the DL or IL. Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah, it's hard to break the habit, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like San Diego Chargers.
I'm like 50-50 on that one. It's really like a coin flip, like we talked about. Tyler Glasnow is out 4 to 6 weeks with a mild forearm strain. That is never good to hear a pitcher with a forearm strain. It's going to be shut down for a few weeks before they start throwing again. We just talked about Tyon's level of concern. We know Severino, you mentioned him out for a while. What are your concerns with Tyler Glasnow? Because, you know, people hear forearm strain, that usually is a precursor to a very bad situation.
It almost always is a precursor to a bad situation. So this is not going to end well, chances are. And I'm looking at this in a situation where it's a shame. It's very sad. You can't dwell on that. I think a lot of people who drafted Glasnow did so with a lot of fervor and a lot of, I know I'm going to be right about this. And they were. And that is the hardest thing to do, is then to sit back and go, okay, and now it's over probably. So, you know, nobody wants to believe it. Nobody wants to, you know, to think that it's going to happen to them until it does. And it has. And for me, I think it's something that, like the Tyon situation, you act exactly the same. You look for an owner who's above you. You see what you can get and you try to move on and redraft. You're stuck in Dynasty. You're stuck in Keeper because you don't want to give them up and you want to hope for the best. But I don't know. I'm actually slightly, if I had to choose between Tyon's news and kind of the things that are coming out of that camp versus the Glasnow stuff, I would probably lean towards Tyon a bit, but I'm not really excited about either prospect, to be telling you the truth. I think they're both probably, you know, more likely to be heading in the wrong direction, unfortunately, which just sucks. Because, I mean, how many freaking pitching injuries can we have in 1 year? It's not even Memorial Day, and I swear to God, it feels like half of Major League Baseball is on the IL.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I know you guys kind of talked about that on that sleeper in the bus that was really awesome about fixing baseball. And it's just been a concern all around because it's just injury after injury. I make a tongue-in-cheek joke almost every episode. I do two a week, like 3 days apart. And it seems like I have no problem filling the news section with multiple IL stints yet again.
Oh, that's what it is. Thing. The news it's is – oh, crazy. That's the same thing on my show. It's crazy. I can't tell you. Like, that's basically what it is. Like, hey, welcome to the show. Here's who's hurt. And it just, it sucks, man.
Like, yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. But you mentioned it with Tyon, and you kind of mentioned it with Glass now. If you are doing Dynasty and Redraft, if you want to tell your boys tomorrow night that I'm stealing this from their show, that's fine, because they asked me the question last night. What would you do to approach the Dynasty talk with them? Say you're a team that's like in last place or towards the bottom, and a team towards the top has a Glass now, a Tyon, a Severino even. What do you, let's just go Glass now by itself. What is it going to take to make that trade?
To make which? I'm sorry, I'm going to follow you.
If you're in a Dynasty league, I know I went all over the place.
Oh, so in a Dynasty situation league, to get Glass
and you're
now?
At the bottom trying to try to trade for Glass now from a guy near the top, what do you think is a fair trade in a Dynasty?
You know, I think it's ironic, probably a piece like Honeywell, like something like that, where there's a little bit of risk there. I feel like that's the thing. It's like you're going to end up with another risk reward prospect kind of piece, unless you're going to take a guy with a lower ceiling kind of a pitcher too. I think that could be in there. I'll tell you what, I mean, if you could get Josh James or something like that for him, I'd take that and run. Okay. I think that's the kind of guy that I would want, somebody who hasn't quite hit yet but still has ability, or somebody that is also kind of on a questionable run right now or coming back from injury and you're just not 100% sure how that's going to go. But you know, you're not going to get Casey Mize for him, you're not going to get one of those top prospects right now. I don't think that's a possibility, but I think a guy like Honeywell would make sense because you're kind of dealing with the same issue. And if Honeywell bounces back and he's okay and he pitches well here and he gets a shot, he might actually be the, you know, the guy who takes Glasnow's spot potentially at some point later in the summer.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Let's go to the New York Yankees. They rushed Miguel Andujar back from the IL, and now he is back on the IL with his shoulder. Who saw that one coming? big shocker here. Does this mean we should really start to buy into Gio Urshela and his fantasy value?
Do you have a choice right now? Like, I don't know.
I tongue-in-cheek talk about Urshela last episode just because he's playing so well, and now he actually has a road to playing time.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know, the whole Yankees team, I've kind of thrown my hands up because when all the injuries happened so early on with Judge and obviously Stanton early on too, and of course the Severino one, and then you had Paxton, and it's just like you just keep adding to the list, and it just goes on and on and on. Sanchez was out for a while. You look at the bottom of this lineup, and it's literally, it looks like one of those teams from one of the major league movies. You're like, who the hell are these guys? I like to fancy myself pretty knowledgeable when it comes to baseball, but there's been some nights where I look up and I go, who? Like, I'm with you.
I'm pretty savvy with the baseball knowledge.
Pretty savvy. I kind of write a book every year.
Yeah. I've done this multiple times this year. It's been like, who the hell is this guy? Literally, like you said, the perfect analogy, the major league movie, but you know, that's good stuff. Cause yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you have to buy into him a certain extent because of playing time. However, it's going to be short lived because eventually you're going to get DD back. And when DD comes back and LeMahieu, I got to say, and this is something you probably won't hear a lot of fantasy analysts ever say, I was wrong so far about DJ LeMahieu, because that was a guy I wanted no part of, because every stat that you had on the split suggested this guy was at best an average player, at best away from Coors. And that scared the hell out of me, but he's been very good since he went to the American League, and maybe they just haven't figured him out yet, but when they will, it comes crashing down. I don't know, but what I can tell you is he's played well enough. You're not going to be taking Torres out of the lineup. So, you know, eventually you're basically going to get Didi coming back. And I think that'll then kind of solidify whatever they're doing in the infield. And I don't know if Urshela is going to really crack that rotation at some point, but that's still, you know, a couple months away here.
Yeah. And that's the thing here. So if you can ride the hot streak while you can, I'd say in deeper leagues, it's interesting. I never thought that would happen, but it is 2019 after all. Let's revisit something. I know we talked about it when you joined me in the preseason. Is Carlos Martinez of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's coming back from his injury, could come back as early as this weekend, going to be coming out of the bullpen. What do you think they're going to do with him? Because I know you're a proponent of him being a closer at one point. Do you still believe in that?
I still personally believe it's the best role for him because it's so controlled. It's a short spurt. You get him up there, you let him just go lights out, balls to the wall, go for it. And then it's a clean inning. That's it. And then he can only pitch so many days in a row. Some people say, well, I don't know if that's a good role for him, to which I say, well, you can't pitch him in the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning because exactly. Because what you can't have, I know my dogs love me. I love you too.
Yeah. I love you too. My God.
I don't have dogs. Bubba has dogs. I just love But honestly, I look at this and I say that would be the craziest thing, to pitch Martinez in the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning, because if you do, what happens then is you get him up and down, up and down, or pitching in weird spots, or pressuring him into high leverage situations that are uncomfortable for him that he's not used to, or there's men on base when he comes in. And I just don't think that's the best way to handle him. And I think we're seeing so far that being a seven inning guy is really not as bad either. So why not convert him into a closer and do what everybody else is doing, which is build your strength of your pitching rotation, or whatever you want to call it, your pitching staff, I guess, more accurately. Build it from the back forward, because it's working for some other teams.
Yeah, no, that's the way we're seeing a lot of teams do it. So it will be interesting to see how they do that, because I agree. I don't think he has what it takes anymore to be a starter. We've seen this come a few times. I think he's still – maybe he's not broken anymore, but we've seen this too many times with him. But a short stretch, like you're saying, out of the bullpen, preferably in a closer's role, could be interesting. It could give some breaks to Hicks and Miller. So it'd be really interesting to see what they do there in St. Louis, because they do have a lot of options, just not all the greatest of options. Let's revisit another topic. Jose Altuve heads to the 10-day IL with a left hamstring injury. It's kind of scary because he was just doing it running out a ball to first, which used to never be a problem for Jose Altuve. First off, what's your level of concern with Altuve right now?
It's, I would say at a 4 or 5. I think it's just a matter of trying to make sure that he doesn't push himself too hard to come back, because that's the kind of personality he is. I think this was actually, sometimes when a guy goes on the injured list, I'm actually happy about it. And this is the kind of situation I'm happy about, because knowing Altuve, knowing what kind of gamer he is, he's not the kind of guy that's going to want to sit. So if you make him sit, he has to heal up. He has to get right before he comes back. Whereas if he goes out there and he's not 100%, that's when bad things happen, or bad things go to worse. So I'm actually happy about this. And look, Diaz has played really well. He homered again today, got him in the DFS lineup tonight because of the cheap price. The algorithm hasn't caught up to him, and he's been hot. He had a good weekend too. So Diaz will be fine. They've got enough offense. They'll be fine. Their problem is the back of the pitching rotation. That's the problem right there.
Huge problem. You mentioned Josh James earlier. Do you think he's the next one up?
I wish he was. I'm buying all the shares of Josh James everywhere he was dropped on the cheap in the last week or so, just in the off chance. Because if what happens is when you get around June 1st, that draft pick goes away for Keuchel and Kimbrel. So mm-hmm. Curious if they bring back a Keuchel. I mean, for them, it wouldn't matter with the draft pick anyway. But curious if that happens. And if it doesn't, where else they possibly go? Now, they have the kind of organizational depth that they could put together a deal for a Bumgarner, which would be scary, because if you think about
Bum, I'd be pumped for that.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you get Bumgarner, you get Verlander, you get Cole in a short series. I mean, that's kind of game over, But look, not only did they lose, people forget they lost Morton, they lost McCullers, and they lost Keuchel. That's a lot to lose in a rotation. And as great as Verlander and Cole are, and they are all world, that's tough to come back from. And I feel like they thought they could patch it together with the Wade Miley's and Peacocks. And I know everyone's excited, McHugh. I thought there was potential there too, but I don't know. I just, as a Met fan, I've seen enough McHugh in my life that I know what the other side looks like. So for me, I just was kind of hoping that Whitley or James would kind of step up. And I think James has pitched better of late. But, his ERA might not show it, which is why you could probably pick him up or get him on the cheap right now. But I don't know, man. I think it's either groom one of these guys and throw them in there, or you're going to see them make a move for a team that thinks, that they're out of it sooner than later and bring in a big-time guy. And they've got the pieces to do it. Now, it might cost them a Whitley, but, it's hard. With that rotation, don't you think they'd be the favorite to win again?
Oh, no doubt about it. They'd be the favorites to win.
The American League is kind of weak anyway,
Yeah, exactly. They'd be the favorites to win, at least get to the World Series. And you think they have to keep going for it while they have this window. I'm not saying their guys are getting old, but they're not getting any younger. And eventually they're going to start paying guys as well. So, they gave Verlander a couple-year deal. They want to sign Cole. You go for it while you can. So I don't see why not giving it a go. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. Back to Altuve. We had this discussion preseason. You had Altuve as your top second baseman. I had Whit Merrifield as my top second baseman. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that at the moment?
Well, the 9 home runs from Altuve looked pretty damn good there. And look, the thing was for me, this was a guy who had a top 5 overall fantasy value 2 years running. Yes. He has one down year where he's hurt, and then everyone wants to take him and throw him away. Same thing with Chris Bryant. Yep. It's literally the same issue. And I have all the shares of Altuve and Chris Bryant that could possibly have fallen to me. And, April was a little slow for Chris Bryant, but it looks real good right now, don't it?
Yes, indeed.
Really riding that wave. I'm patting myself on my back with my healthy shoulder, my healthy Chris Bryant shoulder. But, you know, that's why you can't panic. If you believe in something, you believe in a player, you can't let that happen. And I love Whit Merrifield, too. And part of the reason why I value both those guys so much is because the rest of the crop at second base from a relative position value, which is how the Black Book values players in terms of how much better they are than the fantasy league average. Those guys were so far and away above everybody else at second base that it just was a no-brainer. And as much as I love Merrifield, it was also a matter of, okay, well, what's the offense he's in? How's that going to work out? And Altuve, I looked at, is more of a self-sustainable player. Yes. And look, I mean, Merrifield continued to be a very good player. The fact he's going to play more outfield now, too. And Merrifield's another one of these dudes where I would not be shocked if they trade him. He's got a very, very friendly team contract. The Royals are in complete rebuild mode anyway. They could get a haul for a player like that. Merrifield is a good, versatile talent. Can hit different spots in the order. I would love to see him on a contender and see what he could do. So don't be shocked if he's a guy isn't moved. And I thought that contract was amazing that they got him to agree to that. And I think a lot of teams will give up a haul because not only could you have him for the stretch run, but you got him locked in for a couple of years at a very reasonable cost.
Yeah, I was shocked by that deal. Like, I understand he's older than most people remember, but I was very surprised by that. He got
you want to play a fun game, Bubba? You like games?
I love games. What you got?
I got a game for you. Guess how many days were lost to the DL or the IL? Well, no, it was the DL still last year. Guess how many days Major League Baseball were lost to the injured reserve?
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be
a guess. It's in the thousands. So, yeah, you know,
I'm going to say like 1,700.
Higher.
Oh, wow.
You're not even close.
3,500.
Keep going.
Oh, shit. 5,000.
Higher.
This is depressing. Just tell me. That's as far as
7,337. I knew I had the number in the Black Book, so I had to go pull it up. So while we were chatting before, I went into the little Word document from the Black Book 2019 for baseball, pulled that bad boy up, and there it is. So that was a record. The previous record was the year before when it was about 6,900. So 10 days.
That's almost
DL,
21
really.
Years. That's almost 21 years.
Joe. And then you know what? The irony is, it makes you want to drink.
Yes. Yeah. Look at you.
Look at me. Making dad jokes. That's
it's like
what
you've
I
done
do.
This before.
I drink and I know things.
Yes, you
but
do.
But seriously, though, it is depressing. And this
is horrible.
This is the state. And I'll tell you what, I don't know what we're at this year so far. I don't know if I can find that information out. But I mean, let me tell you something. That is stunning.
Well, and it makes you think, you know, Derek Holland just came out saying I had a fake injury they put me on for. How many of these guys are going on with fake injuries, making our life miserable? But these guys are, we know these teams are working the 10-day system. Like, this is crazy what is taking place right now.
Yeah. Oh, the funny thing is, too, this one place has a money spent on the DL thing, which is kind of cool, too. So almost $169 million on the disabled list last year.
Wow.
Oh, baby, that is fun.
That is a
good time. Yeah, and yet, Bubba, we are in an age where everybody, like, we have the greatest athletic training and greatest analysis and all these incredible things we can do physically for these guys, and they play less. They play less than when Keith Hernandez used to smoke cigarettes in between innings, and they play less than when you had like fat bastards like Sid Fernandez pitching. Yep. And I don't understand this. I don't understand what happened. Where's the disconnect here? Because clearly there's a difference between training for the Olympics and training to play baseball. And there's some kind of disconnect. It ain't working, man. It ain't working.
Yeah, there's one reason why I said I always loved baseball growing up, because I was never the fittest kid in the world. But all shapes and sizes could play baseball.
Oh, that
was
my
the beauty of it.
Look at and John nowadays, Kruk. Look at that guy.
Look at Mark Grace. He'd close down every bar in Wrigleyville, and he'd be there for an 11 o'clock
game.
That's
right. God bless him. And he was there,
Daryl Strawberry was knocking it out in between innings, and it didn't matter.
Oh, my God. I mean, come on, all those guys. It was just insane. It was crazy. And yet they showed up. They took a couple greenies, and boom, bring back the greenies. Bring back something. I don't know. I keep saying it, and I know I'm unpopular, but I don't care. I say it anyway. Bring back some sort of controlled level of HGH use for guys to come back for injury quicker. If they can televise it on television in commercials, I don't know why guys can't take it. Like when they prescribe it for my mom when she has a hip issue, I don't understand why they can't like prescribe it for somebody to come back from some sort of baseball injury. I just don't understand it. I mean, come on, let's be grown-ups here. Can we use it properly? Yes. Can it be abused? Sure. Let's not abuse it. Let's be smart. Let's help these guys do the thing they want to do and the thing we want them to do.
Yep. It was a beautiful game when we had Roger Clemens throwing 100 and Barry Bonds 70 home runs.
Great. I love what, do you remember when guys were hitting 30 home runs and you're like, boy, it's kind of a down year.
Is it even the All-Star break yet? Like, really?
Oh, yeah. I was like, man, Vinny Castilla's only got 25 home runs so far. Jeez, what's going on?
Exactly. Crazy times. Crazy times.
So fun.
A couple more pieces of news here. Vinny V goes on the DL or IL again. Did it again for the Phillies. Does that mean Nick Pivetta time, Mr. Pisapia?
You know, it could. I don't know if they want to rush him back, but I'm not sure what his ownership is. I don't know if you want to check that out, but if somebody dropped him, I think this is the perfect time to pick him up and see what happens, because he has been good since they sent him down there. And sometimes it's just a matter of getting a guy mechanically right and, you know, giving him a step away and a deep breath. And I'm not the biggest Pivetta guy, but free is great. So if he's out there, you know, now that I always wanted to acquire Nick Pivetta, not draft Nick Pivetta. That was my mindset on it. And this is the perfect time to acquire him, I think, right now, if you can.
Yeah, 24% of Yahoo leagues, 39% of ESPN leagues. So he's definitely
all right. So, more than half of leagues, he's, you know, almost. So it's that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's not bad, they say. Yeah. Last piece of news here, Malik Smith's coming back from the IL, most likely on Monday, if not Tuesday. He's owned in about 50% of leagues right now. I even saw a guy in TGFBI drop him this week for J.P. Crawford. That shocked me. Not sure what that was about. But Smith was crushing it in his little detour to fix himself in the minors. Steals are hard to come by at times. Do you have interest in grabbing Malik Smith?
Yeah. I mean, Roto Leagues, you have to respect the speed. Again, it's not my favorite format. I know. And again, unpopular. I'm like the unlikable guy in fantasy. I say all the things that, you know, it's like, I like you're points
the,
leagues.
You're the Clint Eastwood of the fantasy.
If I want to be that, I want to be somebody cooler than that. That guy's old and weird now. You know, somebody told me in that last movie he did, like, he's got like a threesome scene. Like
in the Mule, Clint has a threesome scene.
That's what I heard. I heard that. Oh, and my. I'm thinking about, and of course he directed it. So, yeah, you know, like I'm trying to figure out which is more unbelievable. The fact that he has a threesome scene or the fact that he's like a 90-year-old guy running drugs for some Mexican cartel. Like, I don't know, but
that's pretty
must
crazy.
Be good to be Clint Eastwood. You know what? I take that back. I do want to be Clint Eastwood.
I just wanted to say, after that last comment, are you sure about this?
I think I've talked myself into it. That's right. I'm my own man.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. Oh, we're having too much fun here. Before we get to the Game of Thrones part of this, let's do a little fab talk. Every week, I like to go through the most added / most expensive, kind of just interesting names that got picked up throughout the week. Some weeks way more than others. And if it gets boring, we can make fun of people for just bidding outrageously. So I have all kinds of fun with this. And it just proves that no one listens to my show because they never come and ask. But Charlie Tilson, he's leading off for the White Sox right now. Extremely cheap. I don't expect, you know, anything fancy here, but he went in over half of the leagues in TGFBI, went as high as $51. Do you have any interest in a guy like Charlie Tilson right now?
Well, I think when you see people being aggressive on a player like that, they're looking at the fact he's hitting the top of the order. They're looking at the number of at-bats. Those extra at-bats can add up. And, you know, White Sox have had some moments offensively, too. You know, Anderson and Makata have shown the best versions of themselves. I'm still not 100% sold. It still is just April. And, you know, I was looking at Tim Anderson and just, you know, there's a lot of flaws that I still see there with him. So I can understand the Tilson, but put it this way, I have zero shares and I'm not crying about it. But
yeah,
I think right now that's another sign of just, this is part of that sign of the desperation of the number of guys in the DL every year. And we just kind of, or IL, and we're just kind of looking and trying so hard to find bodies. And sometimes if you can't do it with talent, you have to do it with volume. I think a guy like Tilson can do that.
Especially, like, I like to remind people, this is for 15 team leagues in TGFBI. So you are bargain basement hunting at times on names you might not be grabbing elsewhere. But Chris Martin, he's been getting the save opportunities for the Rangers right now. He went a ton of leagues, 15, 16 leagues. Three leagues took him at 125, 126, and 126. So he got paid, but some went as low as $9. That's why the spectrum of bids are mind-boggling at times. Like,
this is why I hate the $1,000 budget. I hate it. Because the spectrum is somewhere, well, what do you bid on him? I don't know, somewhere between 9 and 126. I think that's the number.
Like, that's ridiculous.
It's quite a range, Bubba. Well, my favorite part of that is I just every time somebody overpaid in a draft for Leclerc, I just laughed. Because I get looking at it, I'm like, this is the trap. Here it is. And I do this every year in the Black Book, and I say the same thing every year. And if you listen, chances are you do pretty well. It's two things. You either pay for the elite guys, and you do so in leagues where you have mandatory RP spots, where you have mandatory relief pitcher spots. All of a sudden, that becomes a very tricky position, and you have to treat it differently than something that's wide open. In those kind of leagues, which is a lot of Yahoo kind of formats have that kind of thing in it. Some CBS leagues will put in stuff like that. But outside of that, if it's just wide open, the worst thing you can do is overpay for the middle tier, because the middle tier is the one that will crush you. It has the most turnover. And the problem is, in the middle tier, that's when you're passing on really good, solid veteran position players. And those guys can contribute on a daily basis. And these guys contribute, I don't know, 40 times a year, if that. And I think that is... that's the difference. And to me, it's like either you go for the top guys or you just completely just shop in the basement and just hedge your bets and take some shots. And you might be right on one or two, and then you play the waiver wire like you do now. And I just, it's the overpaying for the middle that just drives me crazy. And every year it's the same nonsense, and every year it's a failing strategy. Look at Cody Allen last year. That was another guy that I was like, don't overpay for Cody Allen. It's the worst thing you could do. And look what happened.
Yeah, and that's why one of the things I brought for discussion a lot in the preseason with constant bullpen struggles is basically what you're saying. You pay for the best, or you just kind of play the game. I was saying, do we move up our thoughts? Because that used to be a big bugaboo. Like, you don't take relief pitchers early, this, that, and the other. But like you're saying, if you can lock down two of the best relievers,
you lock you never down have to worry 70 about the rest save. Of the year. Well, but here's the thing. Like, to be competitive in saves on a year and a 12-team roto, you need, like, what, like 75, 80 to be competitive?
Give or take, yeah.
Right. So you can lock that down with two guys who are going to give you strikeouts and good whip and all that other good stuff. That's a no-brainer. Yep, you know, you can put yourself in position for wins, but saves are going to come to a certain extent anyway. You're going to get a number of saves, a finite number between 25 and 35 from the top guys, usually more like 30 plus. So, I mean, I just don't get that. You know, you could find another half a dozen or a dozen elsewhere by playing the wire, but geez, man, to go in there and just go and just lock up saves, I don't see why people don't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a good philosophy. I think we're going to see more of it as these bullpens continue to get murkier and murkier.
Well, that's another thing, too, when you add that in, too. When everything's a committee now, there's less and less sure spots to go, which is even more to the point why you don't overpay for the middle.
Yeah, look at Jose Alvarado, probably the best reliever in Tampa Bay. He hasn't had a save chance since middle of April.
I know, it's crazy. We talked about that yesterday on Black Book, and I didn't realize that it had been that long. And then so I went back, and I was like, here's everything that happened April 7th. And I was reading all these things, and it was like Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown were in a fight on Facebook or somewhere on Twitter or something. Like, that's how long ago it was. Like, that's what was going
like
on.
Felt like an eternity ago.
It was WrestleMania weekend. It was when Bret Hart got attacked at the Hall of Fame. Like, that was April 7th. Like, that's the last time it's happened. So there's a little perspective for you.
Yeah, that brings it into perspective for you. Let's talk some more perspective. Danny Duffy, coming off a couple of okay starts at a two-step this week, went from $2 to $57. You know, Duffy's can be one of the most tilting guys because he can see him pitch gems or just get destroyed. You know, in a deep league like this, does Duffy have some fantasy value for you? Or is he
if
just
you catch him on a good run? I think it's the two starts really why you saw the aggressive bidding. Okay. It's teams looking to stream, wanting and partially because they want it, but partially because they don't want it done to them. I feel like Danny Duffy's when you see a $50 Danny Duffy bid, it's like protective. It's like, I'm going to try, and I'm sure as hell not going to let somebody else do it to me, because I'm going to be pissed if I'm the guy that lost out on him, and I'm going to make sure that I at least, you know, cock block somebody else from getting him. And I think that's kind of more where it was.
Pretty much. Gio Urshela went for $1 to $40. Gio Gonzalez went all the way up to $81. I'd like to take
who, by the way, I drafted in TGFBI, and then I waited for like 2 weeks. And I was like, I just can't wait anymore, and I dropped him. I was like,
I either did it in TGFBI or the Barf League. I can't remember which one it was, but I did the same thing. And I was like, okay.
Well, look, because it made sense. He's a free pitcher, and you see what happens. And of course, what is he out? He has two starts against the Mets, a team that he dominates throughout his entire career. And there you go. Like, and then now he looks like gold, and now people want to spend $80 on him. So you can't win.
Yeah, pretty much. This one, I'm really curious your thoughts here. Hunter Pence went in about 14 leagues, went from anywhere from $11 to $188. That's a little steep. Little steep there. Little steep. Kerry Klug in League 3. That was a little steep there. But the next closest bid was $88. But what's your thoughts on Pence? Because all peripheral stats look decent, but, you know, he is getting older.
Well, I mean, he's old. Let's just say it. I mean, he's not even getting older. I mean, if he gets any older, I'll say this. Hunter Pence, to me, has always been a professional hitter. He's always been one of my favorite players to own. I've always owned a ton of Hunter Pence shares over the years because he's a guy that did a lot of things well. And I love that kind of player. And then he had a lot of injuries. And unfortunately, the back end last couple of years has been bad. I think it's great that he's having a nice little run. It's a favorable home ballpark. I think there's another way. He's like, you ride the streak, but you can't think this is it's not a long-term fix. This is a short-term gain. And I think to spend $200 on a short-term game is just madness.
Yes, it is. Mac Williamson got the call from the Gigantes, big-time power guy in the minors. He's showing
see, that one I like.
Times. He went from 8 to 133.
I can't quit him. He's my yes. Brokeback Mountain. I just can't quit that guy. I drafted him when he was in his first year with the Giants organization in my Dynasty League a couple years. I'm in this crazy it's been for 10 years now. It's a 2014 Dynasty League. It has hardly any turnover. It's me and Melchior and Scott White and Heath Cummings. And it's a bunch of those dudes. And it is a super competitive league. You have one bad injury, you're basically done. It's really tough. But Williamson was a guy that I scouted, drafted, had in my minor league system. And that league is 10 minor leaguers deep each team. So we are rostering 240 minor leaguers. And that's not the guys that you have on salary that are really premiums who come in that league. You got to put on salary because you can't let them go to the wait till the rookie draft because this is not going to happen. You're never going to get those guys. So
yeah,
it's crazy about that. And Mac Williamson had so much talent and he got hurt. And then he started to have a good run last year. And then he had the concussion issue. And then it's just never ending for him. And then this year I was like, okay, finally, maybe he's going to get it. And then I had him everywhere and I had to drop him. I had to drop him when he got sent down. I just needed the roster space and the spots where I had him. And of course, I didn't want to overpay to pick him up. And I hope he has a good run because in all these years, I'd finally proven something of what the time I wasted on Mac Williamson. But look, alas, it is what it is. I wish him the best, but I would certainly throw a couple bucks his way. What was the highest he went for?
133.
Wow. Wow. Yeah,
the next one was $73. So Brad That's Coleman of Baseball HQ went steep. The next one was Gray Albright from Razzball went 73.
Gray's a character.
But it's great with Gray's because it shows you that the next closest pick in his league, the next closest bid was $2.
Yeah, well, that's a, that's the thing, man. That's
the fun part of Fab.
Well, but like Fab, but you don't have that happen in $100 Fab.
No.
You don't have that. You have much more discipline, much more careful things. And I don't know about you, but I like a lot of these expert leagues. They have the rule where if you pick a guy up, you have to start him that week, which I freaking hate. It's such hot garbage, and it's like that in tout forever. And I just it's the dumbest thing ever. And I just like why?
Because you want to make zero sense.
Right, because you want to prohibit my ability to think ahead or you want to penalize my ability to be proactive. Like, what kind of nonsense is that? It's the dumbest rule ever. I hate it.
It's blasphemy.
It is blasphemy.
Let's go to a guy that, could be blasphemy eventually. Is Ronnie Rodriguez, who's crushing the baseball for the Detroit Tigers, went from $11 to $61 to FSAA in my league. Next closest bid was like $40. But what's your thoughts on Ronnie? Starting every day at shortstop, middle of the order, showing a little bit of pop.
Look, you definitely got to ride the wave. I mean, he's not a spring chicken. He's 27. So it's not like he's some 24-year-old kid who just came up and everyone's like, oh, my God, where'd this guy come from? It's unbelievable. But, he was not a guy that I saw coming personally. In the minor leagues, he's a .260 kind of hitter, .270 kind of hitter. He doesn't have a whole lot of great on-base skills. That's the thing to me that I think is – the reason why I'm not going to buy into it right away, whatever the power is, when you're the batting average doesn't always, make the thing for me. To me, it's about what's the OBP, what's the strikeout to walk ratio, what are these guys doing, what kind of plate discipline or pitch selection do they have? Because that to me is what's going to determine whether or not he's going to be a good major leaguer. Because when we get to the major leagues and you face better pitching, that becomes a much harder thing to do to be successful than it is in the minor league level. As raw as some of the talent is at Double A, it's just one of those things you look at it. But like for me, I look at it, he's a career, 300 OBP guy. And that's not the kind of player I'm going to get excited about. I'll tell you, he's the perfect guy on a hot streak to turn around and trade and deal for somebody else. I'd be all about dealing him. So sorry, Ronnie. It's nothing personal. I just don't like your OBP skills.
Yeah, but Ronnie, call in next episode. We can talk about it.
Ronnie, call in. I would love to talk to you. I think you're a great guy. Steve he does Sisson. Great charity work. And he, like, it doesn't have, and look, you can deal with a 300 OBP if you have power like Joey Gallo. I could give two crap. Yes. But he doesn't.
So, exactly. You know, like, he does not. He's running hot right now. Running he's hot.
Running hot, baby.
Steve Sisson went in about 14 leagues. The highest bidder, Jeff Erickson in my league, went for $98. Pedro Strop went to the IL. So right now it looks like Sisson's jaws, but there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle there. Are you buying in on him being the guy right now, or is it just an absolute mess in the Windy City?
It is an absolute mess in the Windy City. I mean, he's the guy right now, today, but I mean, when the wind blows out of Wrigley, somebody will also be new. Yes. I mean, where's Brandon Morrow at? What's his deal?
He had another setback.
Oh, another setback for Brandon Morrow.
That might be one of the worst contracts I've ever seen. When they signed that, I'm like, what are you doing, Theo?
Well, and that's the thing. It's very funny to me because there's been a thing around the league. It's been two schools of thought. There's the, oh, whatever, it's three outs, it doesn't matter, let's not make a big investment. And then there's the school of thought of people go, no, this is super important. And the more we can get these bullpens right, the more we can really build, especially for playoff teams. And I don't know, man. I look at that situation there and I keep looking at Kimbrel out there and I don't understand why. I guess Kimbrel's just waiting to see who's going to give him the most money and the most time. I don't think a 5-year deal was kind of absurd. If he gets a 3-year deal somewhere, he's looking for a place where he can go and win more. And I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to, I don't blame him. I want to go pitch for somebody where I'm going to win. I'll tell you what, Atlanta's looking better and better. I mean, that's another one that's a mess. So many messy bullpens right now, man. And I'll tell you what, the other one too is like that kid Shane Green has pitched so well this year in Detroit. Yep. I would be hedging my bets and picking up all the Joe Jimenez shares I can right now for the cheap. Yeah. For a dollar, pick up Joe Jimenez. And you wait, and in a month or so, when some team goes early looking for more relief help, Green would be at the top of the list, I'm sure, for a lot of teams right now.
Yep, 100% agree with you. That's why I was telling guys recently, like Reyes Maranta for the Giants, I'd be picking him up as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, yep, because Will Smith's going to go too. Yep.
Yeah, big fan of him. So there's definitely guys you could go get now instead of paying $98 for Steve Sisson. All right, that ends the fantasy baseball portion of this podcast. Now we enter the Game of Thrones. This is what Joe and I came for. I don't know about you guys. This is what we were here for. Yeah. Yes. Go continue. No. But episode 5, the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones. Like, this was what we were hoping it would be. Before we get into the details here, how satisfied were you with this episode?
Very, very. There is. I don't know if you've seen me on social media today, but I've been salty.
I've been fighting the battles on the opposite side, so that's why I'm
the perfect guy. Well, here's the thing. I understand everyone has high expectations, and the show has set a bar that's incredibly high. It's almost Shakespearean-esque how high the bar has been set with this program over the years and the high quality. And I understand that some people, you know, have built it up so much that it's very difficult almost for them to enjoy it. And they feel like it's over before it's starting, and they don't know how to, you know, because it's not the normal thing. And then last year was only 7 episodes, and now it's only 6 episodes, and I'm going to deal with this. And I get all that, and I had to wait 2 years for it, and it's all going to be over so fast. And just enjoy the ride. I mean, this is the Daenerys heel turn, by the way, has been a long time coming.
Yes.
And it's been a long time coming. Anybody who was like, I was in an argument, but a discussion with Drew Loftus today about it. And he was like, I can't believe it happened like 5 seconds. I was like, 5 seconds? What the hell have you been watching for the last 2 years? Yeah. Like, she's been burning Tarleys last time I checked. She's been burning Dothrakis. She's been kind of going a little crazy. She's had the tendencies. And now all of a sudden, you know, she comes and she helps and she saves the day. And now she's realizing that now she's in a new world and she might have a dragon, but she's not the one that everybody wants to lead them. Yep. And then on top of that, all the other difficult situations she's in, and then she loses the girl, the Missandei woman, and then Jorah dies. And it's been a bad stretch, dude, for her in a short period of time. And you could see the snap coming, and I thought the snap was great. I mean, it was horrible, but great.
Yeah, I have zero problem with it. That's why I'm glad we get to talk about it here, because you can only say so much on Twitter, obviously, before, and people never understand it's always their viewpoint and no one else's. Mm-hmm. But I had no problem with that at all. Like, I liked the episode. I'm just disappointed in how fast things are going. That's just me being petty. Like, that's just because.
And that's fair. That is healthy.
Like, that's like, because, like, we talked, like, you said it, like, we built this bar.
So I don't want it to end. I don't want it to ever end.
No. And, like, for me,
I want it to go on the rest of my life. I want there to be Game of Thrones
so good was the drawn out story arcs. Like, I would have loved to see an Arya and the Hounds ride to King's Landing. Like, the stories and the conversation would have been amazing. And we used to get that in the older Game of Thrones.
Bubba, think about, just in that episode alone, all the conversations. Actually, the previous episode, all the conversations you did not get.
Exactly.
You got the precipice. Like, well, he turns to Bran and he says, "You tell them, that right?" And I'm waiting for them to tell him, and I'm waiting for them to unload this, and then they don't show that. Like, what do you mean? And then the scene with Tyrion where Sansa says, "What if there was another person?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" And then they never show that. Now I don't know if they're going to go back and show these things or not, but they're probably not. That's the stuff that they could have done, and it could have been. I'm with you 1,000%. Though there were a lot of opportunities that got cut short, but that's part of, unfortunately, they are a victim of their own success because every episode, they have to pay every actor by episode. And that is a ton. It's an S ton of money. As somebody who's been in the industry, I was a professional actor for 15 years.
I've heard now it's like $15 million at this point because of all that they've all made. So I get it. I understand that aspect. It's just me being petty going, okay, I grew up watching this. And now I'm watching this. It's like, I want back to the first one here. That's all.
Well, I said this to a buddy of mine tonight. I'm curious what you think. Now, I've watched the series 4 times, and I did watch them all again. I do watch one season a month leading up to this season. Nice. And it was very fun to do it that way. And I'll say this. I think when all said and done, for those who feel like you do, if you go back and watch the entire thing again, and then you watch season 7 and 8 together as one season, because then it's only, what, 13 episodes?
True.
I think you'll have a much more satisfying feel when it's all said and done. I think the fact you had to wait so long and you are missing the little – you're right. The show – part of the beauty of the show and the success of the show is because the delicate small moments that they let play out, and it's just – it's incredibly well written and incredibly well acted, and it's just – but the people who just want to pick it apart for the sake – like I was in a Twitter fight with some idiot today who's like – like, it's just unbelievable that the White Walkers wouldn't have killed more of the main characters. I'm like, no, all those main characters needed to live because they have purposes to serve in the narrative.
They needed to go to King's Landing.
Right, they need to go to King's Landing. They all have a purpose. Like, the ancillary characters have fulfilled their destiny and their prophecy of the things they had to do in that. Well, you know, but it's and then this guy can get away with it. I'm like, he's just going, it's completely unbelievable. Like, you know, and I said, wait, but what is believable is the fact that there's a army of dead people.
Exactly.
Like that's you're okay with, but you're not okay with the fact that they can kill so many people and then other people they seem to have a hard time killing. That's your problem. That's where you draw the line in believability. I just, you know, some people just more.
And that's all it is. It's like, and that's why I was just kind of like, it was such a whirlwind fast kind of like, whoa, what is going on episode. And then it ended, I'm sitting there going, I have so many questions that have not been answered right now. And I'm,
you know what I've been,
like,
doing that's been therapeutic too, that's helping. Before the next week's episode, I rewatch the previous one.
I'll rewatch this multiple times. We record them, and we haven't deleted one episode yet. Like, we watch them.
No, I'll watch them, and to rewatch them before the next one, it kind of helps quell that feeling that you're having, which I totally get because I kind of have it too. And as somebody who, like I said, I've worked in the industry, and I've written screenplays, and I'm an actor. Like, I did community theater. Like, I'm a real actor. Like,
you've done the stuff. You have a SAG credit.
I do. I still vote for the awards. You know, have a SAG card and AEA card and all that stuff. And it's one of those things where it's so glorious and it's so wonderful. And I'm looking forward to the spinoff shows, and I'm looking forward to different stories told in this setting. And I'm sure some of them will be terrible and some will be great. I'm hopeful that they'll be great. But I think that everybody's got to realize that they're getting so caught up in trying to find fault or being disappointed in the narratives that they've built up in their own heads with their own fan theories and all the other stuff that they're missing out. I feel sad for them in a way that they're missing out on something really special here and one of these great pieces of television that we'll ever see, and possibly I think.
Yeah, we might not ever see anything like this ever again. It's absolutely
crazy. They're doing a Lord of the Rings show on Amazon.
That could be interesting.
They got a big chunk of money in this where they're gonna, I forget what the story is, but it's in that world of, you know,
that could be pretty sweet.
The whole Middle Earth thing. So, like, this is gonna be Amazon's version trying to compete with that. And I think it's smart, and they're going to have a built-in fan base and all that stuff. But, you know, this was, I didn't watch the first season of Game of Thrones when it happened, because I knew I was going to like it so much and it was going to be so good. And I remember, and Sean Bean's one of my favorite actors, and I saw him in it. And I was like, son of a bitch, man. If I watch this show and they cancel it, I'm just going to be so mad. You know, so I waited for the second season, and then I binged the first season, and I went, oh my God, it's so good. And then I had to wait, like, after I watched it in like 2 weeks, I had to wait like a week in between every episode. It was torture. It was torture to have to wait. You know,
that's the worst. That's the worst right now. That's the killer part. Let's talk about how
beautiful it was in the opening too. The very first scene of the episode today, yesterday, Tyrion is walking in the room in Dragonstone, and do you see in the backdrop the dragon's mouth?
Yep,
and
right
he stops and he's right. Yep. He's actually physically in the dragon's mouth.
He's done that every time he's walked in there. The previous episodes too. He's right there at that spot.
And that specific moment. And you could tell that specific moment he really was in the mouth of the dragon. Yep. And it was a dangerous place for him. And Varys is one of my favorite characters of all the show. And the scenes between the two of them have always been magical. And the scenes between him and Littlefinger were always spectacular. And I'm curious, what were those notes he was writing and where did he send them to?
Did they get sent out is what I want to know.
You know, some of them did because he started early in the day.
Yeah. And I would love to know where those went because he was spreading the gospel. I'm imagining that Jon Snow is the rightful heir to the throne. I'm imagining.
And who's the Prince of Dorne?
That's a great question.
You know, they kind of dropped that in there. That. Yeah. They dropped it in there like the new Prince of Dorne. But who the hell's that?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And if that's where it's like, if we had our normal schedule, we'd probably know these things.
Yeah. And you know, everyone's like, well, I don't understand. Arya wanted to kill Cersei for all these years, and she finally gets her in the Hound's.
Well,
like,
let's talk about all right. The Cersei thing real quick. Okay.
You know, okay. I love her, so be careful.
Yes. Well, okay. That's fine. To me, all the great villains of this show have had a proper death. Like, things have been great. Even as simple as Littlefinger getting his throat slashed by Arya. So many amazing deaths. To see the rubble crush her, to me, wasn't justified. And I've heard the scenarios, well, it's her kingdom falling on her, it's her and her brother, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I see the poetic nature of it, but from a fan standpoint, for me, like, I want to see certain villains get their comings, and that didn't feel like she got hers.
Well, you know, it's funny. It depends, I guess, on your point of view of her as a villain. And I understand that she's not sympathetic, but I always found her to be a very empathetic character in a lot of ways.
Well, you saw that yesterday. All of a sudden, when she lost her power, it just changed her whole.
But you've seen that
changed.
In little pieces throughout the series. See, when you go back and you start and you realize, you know, she had feelings for Robert. And then the first night, you know, he calls out the other woman's name. And she loved her children. The first one was a real POS. And, you know, and she tried to love him through that and all those things and make the apologies and ended up, you know, being taken from her. And then the daughter she loved and it was taken away from her because it was just a thing. And Jaime was given this and this Tyrion was giving that. And meanwhile, she was the one who used to listen to the father. And she, you know, she, and then you go on and on and it continues on and the things that she did. And then the whole thing with Tommen and the whole thing with the religious people. And, you know, she is always, you know, power has been very important to her, but she's also been the person who constantly was told what to do, when to do and how to do it. And then eventually she was like, no, it's funny. It's the irony is a lot of people see Daenerys as the strong female character in this. And I always thought it was Cersei.
Oh, Cersei's definitely the strong female character.
To me, she is the
Daenerys
one who says
weak.
I always agree. I thought she was the one who said, no, I'm going to show everybody. This is how you do it. This is how you take power. And if she was a man, people would never look at her quite the same way. They would call her a bitch and this and that and all these things.
You're 100%
and
correct.
It was a metaphor. You're right, of the kingdom coming down and falling upon them and then, you know, being kind of encased in all that. But at the same time, I love the juxtaposition you got there because you had Daenerys, who is this, you know, this humanitarian becoming evil. And then all of a sudden you saw the humanity in the character everybody perceived as evil.
Yep.
And I thought that was a wonderful turn and all those things. Yeah, it could have been done a little bit better. But I mean, you know. I always put to everybody, okay, well, what's your idea?
Oh, yeah, you know? No, and I agree. That's why.
Yeah, again, and some people nitpicking. Do. Like, you probably have some good ones. I know I have some good ones, too. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, you know what? It's good enough. It's like, good enough. And they say, well, why didn't she just kill her in the Red Keep? Because she wanted her to watch. That's why.
Well, like, what I would have loved to see, like, why didn't she at least give a little flyby? Like, hey, what's up? Like go make contact between it. Like, they never even, like, saw each other. And I'm sitting there going,
she wanted her to watch it burn.
Yeah, well, she did that very well. She did that very, very well.
And you know what? And people want to say, you know, why didn't Arya do what she did? Why'd she turn away so fast after all those years and all that stuff? You're right. Maybe if there had been some more conversations on the road between them, you're absolutely right. Maybe that would have helped that moment a little bit, not feel so rushed.
Well, you saw
she's going to kill the queen. Yes. She's going to kill a queen. Yes, the prophecy will be fulfilled next week.
I'm with you there. I'm with you there. The whole green eye narrative is still in play. When you see the Hound, and he basically tells Arya, if you come with me, you're not making it out, basically. And he grabs her by the back of the head, and you almost see a picture of Arya back when she was a little girl, traveling with him. And it's almost like her whole head switched, like, okay, I need to get out of here now. Like, this isn't for me anymore. I'm not this badass as I think I am. I am, but not as big of a badass as I think I am. And it's time to get out of here before things get real south. That's the way I look at it. I agree.
And I think that I think a couple things changed her. I think sex always changes everybody. The first time you get laid, the first time you get high, always change you.
Changes everything.
I think you're never quite the same person after those two things. Then I think that whole thing with the White Walkers and everything really has – there's something about like, okay, you've just defeated that, and now there's perspective a little bit about what matters and what doesn't. And I feel like there's like a protection level in her family that she feels it's necessary. There's something else there. And maybe it's just another feeling of the destiny, but I don't know how it's all going to go down. Yeah. And I don't know how they're going to do it in an hour and a half or whatever they've given themselves to do it, but it's definitely going to be messy and it's definitely going to be awkward. And I don't think Tyrion's making it out either. I really don't.
No, I think he's going to get, I don't know if it's going to be the Varys treatment, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's pretty similar.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. She did. And he did it again. And I think, you know, Varys has always been right.
Yep.
And he flat out said that.
I hope I'm not right this time, but I'm afraid I am.
Yeah. And he was. And he always is. And that's why I love Varys. And I think also maybe Tyrion, because, you know, he lived long enough to help his brother go out the way he wanted to. So Tyrion's been on borrowed time anyway. So if perhaps there's any sort of feeling like there's some sort of full circle feeling of all that with the Lannister family, I think that's pretty good. I'll take that. And if Tyrion has to go because of it now, he's made a lot of mistakes. That's the only thing too. There's been a real, that character has been so magnificent. And the second season is my favorite. Tyrion as Hand of the King is my favorite season.
Oh, he's one of the best. He is the best character to me on that show.
And Blackwater is probably my favorite episode ever. And the funny part about that is, like, you've seen this magnificent mind over the last couple seasons just make all these mistakes. And then I guess at a certain point, it's like, well, you know, maybe, I don't know. That's what's kind of sad about it, is you're kind of seeing him deteriorate, because he made bad mistakes in Marine. He made bad mistakes in everything in the Conquest since they've come over. I mean, one after the other after the other. So I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see how they figure this all out. But I mean, who's your money for who's on the throne at the end?
I've been saying it for a lot of this season. I think Sansa's there, or there is no throne. And I think it's just seven individual kingdoms kind of run together.
You know what? That wouldn't be shocking.
I think Sansa somehow has her power. She's either queen of the North, she stays up there, or she runs the whole damn thing.
What's interesting about that? That fulfills the prophecy she said of I want to break the wheel. Remember?
Yep. Yeah, we still have a woman on the throne, just like we wanted.
Yeah, you got Sansa on the throne, and I don't know where Jon goes, but
think about it. Sansa is almost a clone to Cersei. They're both just as smart, as powerful, as do it in different ways. But like Sansa has turned into, like she said in that thing with Aon, if I didn't go through what I went through, I wouldn't be the little. I'd still be the little boy or whatever.
It's funny you say that, because in that Blackwater episode, there's one of the great exchange scenes between Sansa and Cersei, where she's basically preparing her. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Where she's saying, you know, this is what you have to do, and this is, and when you're a queen, this is what's expected of you, and all these things. And she's like preparing her. And it's such an incredible exchange between the two of them. And, you know, all this insight, because she sees herself in her.
Oh, same thing. It is. That's what I'm saying. Like, I see spitting images there.
Yeah, you're right. And again, this is what makes it such a great show, because here we are, you could sit and you could talk for hours about it, with all these little things, and they're all there for a reason. And that's, it's just great. And this is what's so much fun about it. And this is why I get sad for people who are all up in arms and not fulfilled enough. It's like, shut up. Yeah. Just,
well, that's why I'm glad we got to talk about it. Cause I can't explain it to people on Twitter. It's not that I don't like the show. I had such high expectations. I'm like, God, I want this. I want that.
Right.
I know I'm not going to get that.
You want more indulgence of it.
Yes,
and
I want the storyline. I want the stuff we got, that the juicy details, the depth.
I didn't feel rushed last year, but there is a feeling of, yeah, like John didn't have the moment with Ghost. John didn't have the moment with the two sisters.
Bron wargs into something. What did he do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
what was that? We used to always see Bron like in a raven or something. We'd see him soar for at least 2 minutes. We saw nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot of the moments there where you're expecting scenes and you didn't get them. You got bombs dropped and then no reactions. And we're used to that. We're used to the exchanges. We're used to these things happening. And it's funny because what's the big problem with this generation of people, right? Nobody has an attention span. Well,
yeah,
because that's
much.
Not true. Everybody has an attention span when you put out a quality product. And at the end of the day, I mean, and it's funny. I mean, like, to bring it back to fantasy, that's what I was trying to do. It's like, hey, you know what's funny? I put out a book every year, and people still read. Like, they read because if it's quality and it's something that's going to help them and it makes sense to them, they like it. I mean, it's just it's not rocket science here, man. It's still how we work. It's just, I feel like nowadays we have less of an attention span for crap. We have less of an attention span for things that aren't and our meter for, because we have so many things on demand available to us. We just don't have to indulge in anything that's even moderately good. It has to be great to get our attention, I feel like.
Okay, two quick ones for you. Arya's whole experience there kind of – I know she had to be the witness to the deal. It stressed the hell out of me. I'm shocked she's alive. Like, some weird things there. Do you think Bran is the White Horse?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that.
Because how did her and a White Horse the only things that survived?
I think you're absolutely right. That's very clever of you. I didn't even think about that. But, you know, it brought me back to one of my favorite movies, Tombstone.
What's the line? Apocalyptic deal.
Right, the apocalyptic line. They're talking about Doc Holliday. And beware the pale horse, for he who sat upon him was death, and hell followed with him.
Yep, and that's pretty much what it was. You saw, like, hell and brimstone everywhere. Hellfire
and
brimstone.
And there you go. And there's the White Horse. And I like
and
that.
Now she's
going to
go
here.
Right and take down the devil.
Bogman was telling me that there's a prophecy in there about something about the killing the lion and this and this, and there's like three things, and obviously the lion's dead now. So you know, I'm curious to see how that all plays out, because if you notice too, on the band on the opening, there's something going on there with somebody with the head of a lion holding the head of a lion, and then something else, and I can't make out what it was. I forgot to pause it the other night and watch it, but there's something there that we should all go and look
at
before
check
the next
that
one.
Out now.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Where like the rings are circling in the opening.
I've been like staring at that harder and harder, because you always had the family crest up there and everything. I'm like, what do we
and
have going on?
There's probably a secret. You know, and then 2 weeks ago with the stupid coffee cup. Like, you know what?
Who gives a shit?
Who cares?
I didn't even notice
back
it.
And look
I didn't
at
even
it
notice it until
I didn't notice it either. And then I see it and I'm like, really? And I went back, and because I DVR'd it was on. I was like, oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
and I'm
sure
like,
enough.
Okay, so they scrub it and it's over. And I love their response to it, which was, she ordered a latte, tea, whatever. That's funny. Like, just come on. Like, it's a show. It's just, it's never going to
enjoy it.
The worst thing is that it took so long to get there, because everyone's been, it's built up in everybody's mind.
We've waited for this moment for years.
Yeah. And that's a problem. And I'll tell you what, the one thing too, I always say that I'd love to see is, I would love to see a series based in all the prequels of this, because knowing the story and how everything unfolds, it would be great to watch that unfold. They're never going to do it, but I guess never say never.
I'd love a full prequel of just Bran starting out the episode warging somewhere and getting to see all the stories that way.
Well, and I'll tell you what, that would be spectacular, and you have that as a plot device. But even if they did it as a special event, even if they did it as like a 3 week thing where they did that story of how everything kind of, you know, with Rhaegar and all that stuff, that would be fantastic to watch. It would be so fun. It would, you know, take people back, and it could be different actors and stuff. That's fine. It's not a big deal.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? I mean, they use the 12 guys to play the mountain. I mean, come on.
Yep.
Like, there's so many wacky things. There's so many recastings in that show. I mean, and what gets everybody's panties in a bunch? The goddamn coffee cup. Like, that's where you're going to get all your nuts to worry about. Like, come on.
Last question for you. Last question.
All right.
How do you think it ends?
You know, I was always hoping that Cersei was going to end up on the throne in the end, and that was going to be the ultimate
you
Game
are
of
the
Thrones.
Full heel.
I'm full heel because that was the ultimate FU ending, which is which was who wanted it more. And I always felt like she wanted it more than everybody else. She wanted it for a different reason because she understood exactly what it was better than anybody. Like Robert didn't understand what it was. Daenerys thought she understood what it was. No, she knew what it was to be queen and she knew what it was to rule and all that stuff. And that's why I thought it would be classic Game of Thrones. Nope, you're not going to get your revenge narrative. It's never going to happen. But that seems to be out the window.
Yes.
I still think somehow Jon ends up on the throne. Mm-hmm. I like to think that Tyrion ends up as his hand.
That would be perfect, yeah.
But I guess it's probably going to be Sam instead.
Which would be great, too.
Which would also be good, because I just don't think Tyrion's going to make his way out of this one.
No, I don't think so.
I'm trying to figure out how they get to the point where it's basically her army, and then you've got his northern guys. So if she gets knocked off, like, how do you deal with that? Like, yeah. If Arya kills her, how does everybody look at Jon and it's not a civil war? Like, I don't know. It's very – I don't understand unless she takes herself out of it. And that's
a tough
the
one.
Only – That's the only thing I can see of where it's going, that there's remorse for her snapping and doing what she did, and then the horror of what she's become. I don't know. There's a couple outs, and I'll tell you what, no matter how it ends, there are going to be people who are upset about it, Everybody should just understand it's a story, and you've been given such a blessing to be alive during this.
Yeah,
no to shit. See all of this, you know, to see this come to start from start to finish and to be able to rewatch it and to know that there's other stories coming that they have in the works that are spinoffs and things like that, which are going to tell Perfect. Different time periods. Yeah, have you ever seen, by the way, there's like an animated version of the beginning of the story of how the Targaryens came to power. Have you seen this?
Never even seen that. I'll have to check that out.
You got to check this out. It's like an anime kind of version. It came along with season 6 or 7. It came along with it in the DVD, but there is a full 45 minute to an hour animated version, and it's really well done. And it's all narrated by other people in the show. Like the guy who played Viserys, it's narrated by, it might be Davos and a couple other people. And it's all in there, and it tells the whole story of, you know, how the Targaryens came to power, the dragons, and it's fascinating. And if you love the show, it is one of the great, like, kind of history lessons of it. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't even care if somebody gave me an amazing animated series based off of it.
That'd be awesome.
Because that's a cheaper way to do everything. Mm-hmm. And I would be all for that too. And I think that's a really cool way to continue telling stories in that world.
I think you're on to something, Joe.
There you go, baby.
Well, I appreciate you joining me. Before we wrap it up, I didn't do it in the beginning. I forgot because you got me talking Thrones right out the gate. But why don't you let everybody know what you got going on? Because I think you have something important happening.
Maybe one or two things. We got the Fantasy Football Black Book 2019, June 1st, dropping on Amazon. It's going to be good times. It's going to be very exciting there. You got Jake Seeley, Matt Franciscovich, Nate Hamilton, Scott Bogman, Gary Davenport, Chris Meaney. It's a who's who. Derek Brown's in there too, Tim Heaney, and myself, obviously. And it's a great group. I'm really excited about this product we're putting out there. I think it's by far the best thing we've ever put out, especially football wise. And that's gonna be out June 1st on Amazon. It'll be on iTunes a little later, but you can always get it for any Apple product with the Kindle app for free. So that's not a problem. So go get it when it comes out there, and you can hear me on the Line Star DFS MLB podcast 5 days a week, me and Chris Meaney. You can hear me on the Black Book with Welsh and Bogman on the Fantrax podcast network, and I do some writing over Fantrax too. I got the team previews, AFC East already out, all four teams are done. So fantasy football fans, football is coming, baby.
Yep, if you can tell, Joe is a busy man, so go check him out. He's on Twitter at Joe Pisa at PS17, and as he mentioned earlier, we're family, so go check him out. Thanks for joining me, Joe. I really, really appreciate it.
Always, my friend.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 170 with Joe Pisapia. Catch you guys later.
better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. Because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.